Good to be with you on this Tuesday. Trust you survived the Easter break and have now refreshed for this 3-day working week, at least for some of us. We are, of course, heading into a long weekend to commemorate Anzac Day. And quite timely too with our guests that we have with us this morning. But before we get to them, let me firstly acknowledge the traditional owners of the land where Let's Talk is broadcast. I'd also like to pay my respects to our elders, both past and present, and welcome you if you're listening to Let's Talk on 98.9 FM and the National Indigenous Radio Service. We're also streamed live on the web, so hello to our listeners tuning in on the World Wide Web. Now, we have with us today a couple of people. Dr. Dale Kerwin, first off, he's a researcher and at Griffith University. You might recall that Dale has been a regular guest to Let's Talk, talking about some of the research that he's been doing, particularly in the Boer War and finding some trackers that were sent over there and who actually never came back, were left behind. And we also have with us a Vietnam vet, Vern Hopkins, who is also a member of the Queensland Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Dedicated Memorial Committee. So welcome to both of you to Let's Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Firstly, to you, Vern, seeing as you're the first time here on Let's Talk, tell us your mob, your country.
Yeah, my country is from my dad's side, is Murrigan tribe. I'm from a little place called Yulo, south side of Cully there. And on my mum's side, my grandmother's great-grandmother's side, she was born in Blackall, so it makes me bidgerer too. I didn't know that until about 5 years ago. So it's good to know where your lines of blood come from, so it's good that way, yeah. But I was born and raised in Rockhampton, you know, up the Rocky Mob, you know, up there. So, yeah, but I've stayed in Brisbane since when I got out of the Army. I've been here ever since.
When did you join the Army?
I joined the Army in 68 here in Brisbane and done 3 years. And when I come back from Vietnam in 71, I got discharged here. And some of my family were there then, so I just naturally stayed here.
And why did you want to join the Army?
I've been asked that a couple of times, but it probably stems from me. It's got a lot to do with me dad and me brothers. Two of my brothers served as Nashos, and my dad was in World War II. So that, to me, seeing that uniform, seeing the uniforms of them and in their uniforms, everything, I suppose I just wanted to carry on the tradition. I don't know, but, yeah, I was 17, 3 months out of my 17th birthday when I joined, and it just seemed the right thing to do, whether I wanted to go over Vietnam or not. I didn't know at the time, but I know that once he was all trained up and I was 19, ready to go over, I thought it was the right thing to do at the time.
Where were you training?
Well, I done me rookie training down in Kapuka, and then I done me core training down in Ingleburn. And then we got stationed up here in 68 up to Brisbane, where I joined the battalion, the second battalion. They just got back from the first tour. Wasn't many of us there. Then we trucked it up to Laverack Barracks in Townsville, where we trained in a number of places like Shellwater Bay and Canungra, of course, before we went over Vietnam.
And what feelings did you have about going over to Vietnam to a place of conflict? How did you feel about it as a 19-year-old?
Well, I guess we're all trained up, anybody that's been in the armed forces, don't understand what I was talking about. You get trained for conflict. It's just instilled into your mind and your body. You just get trained. And we're all young men, and I suppose we was a bit
risk-takers, full of adventure, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we were a bit gung-ho, thought we was, you know, bulletproof and all that, and wanted to go and fight. Little did we know that didn't realise the risk, knowing that we was taking risk, but didn't think it had happened to any of us. But was that soon changed when we flew in our battalion? We flew in when they opened the doors. When we flew over Saigon and have a look down and you see the all the jets there from fighter jets and choppers, fighter choppers and gun pickets and anti-aircraft guns and all that stuff, and open that door and you smell the blood and the stench in the war. It's sort of hit us.
It's a real eye-opener.
And we knew that there was no game anymore. We weren't playing war games. We was about to step into the biggest things that we've ever experienced. And so I guess that's the best way I can sum it up.
So you went to Saigon. Where did your battalion go? What was the area that they covered?
Well, the Australian had a base at a place called Nui Dat, and that's where the we were stationed at, along with everybody else at Australians that was there. So we were stationed down. We caught a they took us down by Hercules, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's where we were stationed, down there.
Right. You said that your father served in World War II and your brothers as well served in the army. From them about...
Big fun?
Did you get advice from them? Did they impart any advice to you?
No, I didn't. Not even Dad give me any advice. Dad never talked about it and me brothers never talked about it either. Like back in then, I think they called them off for a year then, back in the early 60s, I'm not sure, whether I had to do a year. Then I changed it down the track to 2 years, you know. And they never talked about it, and Dad certainly didn't talk about it. But I just thought, well, it was good enough, I suppose, back then, it was good enough for me, Dad and me, two of my oldest brothers, it should be good enough for me. And the lifestyle... I don't really regret anything. I embraced the fact that the friendship and the comradeship that I formed there lays with me still today. We have a reunion. You see on the emblem here, a company reunion every couple of years. This year we're having it up in Sunny Coast, where I'll get to see blokes I served with again and talk again. And you know, basically, we most of us just talk about the good times. We never talk about the real sad times. But it's the best support I have, and when I deal with my own post-traumatic stress, you know, you can pick up a phone and talk to one of them fellas, and their whole family, and their parents, and their wives and their families. You know, and it's great to be a part of it. And so I don't regret that at all.
Were there other Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander men serving at the time?
You would be surprised. A lot of people ask me that question. Both black and white ask me that question. And they get a shock when they find out that a lot of black fellows did, you know. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men and women served over there in Vietnam. It's really... amazes people when you tell them that, you know, that a lot of our people. I had a couple of cousins that served over there, and one of them fought in Battle of Long Tan, and he was wounded over there. And I had a few other black fellas I knew that went over there, but there was a heap of blokes went over Vietnam. So I'm sure more went over to the wars in 1 and 2 and. And certainly now we're finding, you know, with Dale and his group, we're finding men that served over the Boer War. And that makes you immensely proud that, and I go and talk to the group at the Youth Dissension Centre on Thursday. One of the talks I have, when I get up and talk, I try to tell them, I try to instill the proudness that us fellows, whether... You know, black fellas, we're proud to serve under that Australian flag. We were proud to march beside our brothers in arms, but, you know, black and white. And it's immensely, on Anzac Day, we're standing there at a dawn service, and I'll have a tear in my eye. I'll think about a few mates that I've lost over there, and but it makes me proud. And I can guarantee you now, every black fella that you served over there and that I know, and when we talk about it, there's the same as me. They're proud they did.
Mm.
And I'm sure it went right down the line, back to World War, you know, First World War, Second War, Korea, you know, Borneo, Afghanistan. I get young fellows over come from Afghanistan now.
Yeah. During the news, we heard about the digger march that's happening in Sydney, and hearing about how some diggers haven't come forward to be part of the march and that sort of thing, and particularly like Anzac, and because they were seen as you know, a comrade in the battlefield, once they came back to Australia, they experienced the racism that affected a lot of our mob. What about for you personally, Vern? Did you experience anything like that? I mean, you talked about having mates on while you were over in Vietnam. What about when you came back from your tour?
Well, we as Vietnam vets, whether it be black or white, we had that prejudice coming from men that served in World War One and World War Two. We go into an RSL and they looked at us as like, you don't belong here because, you know, you only served the police action over there. Well, my thing to them were, we'll go and tell it to the 500 men that died over there in one of the worst conflict that the world's seen. The racism, of course, the stories that come back from people from Boer War, from World War II, World War I, and all that stuff. You know, given the fact that we didn't have any rights at all as black people, we're not even, well, the Constitution, we're still not recognised as first people of this land. So you talk about prejudice, of course we did. Everybody fronts it, you know. Yes, it was prejudice. But we copped it probably a little bit more because the colour of our skin and stuff like that.
Plus the fact that you served in Vietnam.
Served in the army, yeah. Mm. I think it may have, shook some people up and said, oh, you know, I didn't know which way to come at it. You know, like, they wanted to come at us because of its colour of the skin, but then they said, oh, well, you know, they served in a war in Vietnam. Mustn't be too bad, but, the misunderstanding, I call it, that people portray to themselves. So today I think it's a lot better. I understand about that march down in Sydney. It's the same as Vietnam vets found it very difficult to come out of the woodworks. I know a few blokes that are still over there in their mind. It's a sad, sad thing, you know. And I don't know too much about the march down there. I understand they're marching as one. I think it's each to his own. I probably may not do that. I'd march beside my own, as far as I'm concerned, and this is what this committee is about. It's about making sure that we're not segregating anybody. We're not segregating from the whole community. We realise all we're about is trying to get recognition that our people did serve in all them conflicts, you know, and make government aware that we did. Because government officials, they don't know, unless they jump on a computer, they wouldn't know whatever from whatever, you know. So that's basically what this is all about.
Yeah. We have with us today Vern Hopkins, who is a member of the Queensland Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Dedicated Memorial Committee. We also have with us a researcher from Griffith University, Dr. Dale Kerwin. Dale, welcome back to Let's Talk.
Thank you, Karen, and to the listeners.
And tell us firstly your mob, your country.
My mob are Wurrumai people there at Foster in New South Wales. For people who don't know where that is, Newcastle Airport sits on the southern boundary of our country and they still haven't paid the rent.
Right. Well, that's gets straight to the heart of it, doesn't it? Look, we're talking to, we were just talking about Vern and he touched on the Memorial Committee. Of course, this is something that you've been talking to us in previous occasions here on Let's Talk, and about this committee and this dedicated memorial. Now, tell us, what do we actually have here in Queensland in terms of memorials that recognise the men and women, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men and women who served this country?
Very few. One of the things I write about is social memory and oral histories. And, of course, our mob tells stories and it stays alive in the families. We have a memorial up on Thursday Island to the Torres Strait Island Infantry, and they've done a very good job with their memorial. We have one up in Atherton up there, and it's a rock with a plaque on it, and it's recognising our servicemen and women. We have the Kumbumeri people down at the Gold Coast have put one at Burleigh Heads there on the Borah ground. And that's, a significant place as well. You know, when we look at our culture and how the environment has a lot of importance to us, and we have these sacred places throughout the landscape. And basically not too many other. I know up in North Queensland, I think it's at Arakoon, the mob there have put together a list of their servicemen and women. And that was through Link Up. And as well, in Cairns, there's going to be a cenotaph put up in the RSL in Cairns, and the mob at Yarrabah are working to put that one up.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there'll be one going out at Mitchell to recognise the men that went to the First World War from Mitchell. They were in, I think, the 17th Light Horse and saw action in the Middle East.
And all of these memorials that have been erected have been pushed by the locals themselves.
That's
I mean,
the locals, and it's a lot. It's a love of it's a passion. It's a love of work. It's about recognising our heroes, our men and women who have contributed to this country. And so the local mobs have got together and, you know, it's generally as happens in our communities, one key person gets behind it, then everyone else comes on board.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of negotiations with local government and industry as well as with our mob, you know, and again, making sure we get it right. And that's the other point, you know, because when you look at our history, there's a lot of misconceptions in it. You know, and untold truths. And so that's the important thing, and our committee are looking at that as well, as making sure we get it right.
Mm. Tell us about this committee. So you're looking at erecting a memorial here in Brisbane for the Aboriginal men and women that served.
That's right. It's to represent all Queensland Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men and women who have served in the armed forces. And that's the whole three branches, you know. We ended up finding that there was a bomber pilot, you know. So we have Len Waters as, a fighter pilot. And there was, I think he was Torres Strait Islander man that was a bomber pilot. And he was shot down over Germany and imprisoned in Germany. And I must apologise, I don't have his name. Someone rang me one day and said that. And, of course, I've got it written down and it's another bit of research I need to follow up.
Mm.
And so there's, we talk about the stolen generation. One in three families have been touched by the stolen generation. But I would say every Aboriginal family has had a serviceman or woman in it, whether it be auntie, uncle, grandfather, grandmother, brother, cousins, you know. We've all had someone in our family serve, and if not more than one.
Mm. And it seems a bit remiss that in the state's capital there isn't an existing memorial.
Well, that's right. It's a bit of a passion we've got, and we've had a lot of arguments around the memorial. You know, here in this country we have memorials to horses that served in the war. We have memorials to dogs. You know, at South Bank there's a memorial there to a dog that came over in the Second World War, an American dog. And that's just over near where the old bridge used to be. We even have memorials or statues to pigeons that served in the war. And yet there seems to be some hesitation to recognise our work, you know, our heroes.
Mm. How does that make you feel, Vern, as a veteran, where your own state And, you know, here in the state's capital, we can't seem to get a memorial up for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men and women who served in all conflicts.
Well, I think it's like all governments across the land. We're just an afterthought to most of it. One of the things that Dale didn't mention, that they have a plaque there in Anzac Square honouring the Māoris. You know, some of the people had to join, and when they joined, they had to state that they were Māoris to join the army to fight for their own land. My goodness, you know. And the ignorance of it. The ignorance of whether it be state, local, federal government. Still outstanding to the day. And this is one fight we can win. Fights that we find it hard to win, but we're used to them doing the fight. I mean to say that with this traditional owner groups and everything like that, where mining companies and state and federal governments have our own people separated and arguing about land and money and all that stuff. This is one time that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men and women can come together, all hold hands, and say, listen, we're united on this. There's no arguments. We demand that you give us this recognition for our people that have come and gone and for the ones that are still serving, are still over there in dangerous situations. It'll come under attack any time and you don't know where it's coming from. You know, you see the car bombings and everything like that. You know, might be on a leave somewhere, these people, and walk past a car and it'll blow up, you know. So it's time that government started to recognise and all that stuff. And it's time that our people, as Torres Strait Island men and women and Aboriginal men and women stood together and said, hey, we're gonna get behind this committee and give them the most support we can. Send letters to the local government, send letters to the federal. Come along and send letters to us, address it to Darwin. Donations are certainly welcome, you know. We're fighting this fight on only for the grace of Griffith Uni. We're able to hold little meetings every now and again. Me, Dale, and my other co-chair, Ricky Gross, we meet once a week, and once every 2 weeks we have a little meeting ourselves and just talk about what we're going to put on the agenda. We have that down there in our hotel. We sit around, we might have a meal and talk and try to tie things up there so we can get everything right for when we come to a meeting.
Mm.
But to have, as the doctor said here, that to have memorials for animals and other nations beside the first people of this land is very insulting to me as a black person and as a soldier. I'm very proud of both of them. You'll see in all of our writings, all of our paperwork there is not the word Indigenous. We will not use that word. It's another label that government have put on us. You know, had us on our ethnic groups once, and now we're Indigenous. I hate the word with a passion, and most of us do. And that's why you'll see that wording that we have here, and I may read it out if I could.
Yes, so this is the inscription that
This is the inscription that will be going on. We've had a lot of discussions on it, ups and downs. It says, to honour, respect and remember Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men and women who have served and those who have paid the supreme sacrifice for our country. And we're very proud of them words because I think it covers a lot. There was some suggestion that we put families. We didn't do that because we don't want to do the segregation with our fellow comrades, you know. Mm. All families suffer. Every man that went to war, woman went to war, they leave behind someone, whether they're children, mothers, brothers, girlfriends, whatever. They're suffering over there as much as we, they think. So to put family, I think it's just, we decided not to do that because we're all in the same boat.
And you used the word country. Was that deliberate? Because country can mean many things.
Our country. Mm. Is it not our country?
Mm.
Well, I think it says it all itself. It's our country. There was no treaties made here with us. This is still our country. They still not haven't changed the constitution to recognise it such. But we as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island people know that this is our country, and they'll never take it from us. Not in our spirit, certainly not in our hearts. But in saying that, even knowing that, our people stood up, put their hands up, put the uniform on, went to foreign countries and fought for the rights of this land to be free of all the terrorism, the fighting, the killing. You know, I just, every time I see something on TV about Lebanon or something, how would you like to be living over there and going to bed with an AK-47 beside you? And people don't have to do that. And that's because we've gone over. We're the furthest country in the world to go to war. We've got to travel the longest. And yet our people just said, righto, it's time we got up and went. And they did go. Fair enough. Some of them were made to go into the armies and armed forces. But there's a hell of a lot that just joined, knowing full well that it was there. It's just, I suppose, the pride in them. This is our country.
Mm.
You ask them why, the people, a lot of them are dead by now, but they probably wouldn't have known why, but I think subconsciously their bloodline, the spirit in them will said, boy, you got to go over because this is your country.
War is.
Yeah, they knew that. And so all that stuff, mate, is something that makes me proud that this year is specifically set up for them people.
Mm. And at the moment you've hit a brick wall in the form of the authorities that you've been speaking to.
Yes, we are hoping that the Premier and Lord Mayor will come out and take a bit of leadership on this. You know, we have our people taking leadership roles on it and directing it, and I've got to pay my respects to our elders that I work with. I get quite philosophical about things, and I wanted to do a poetic statement with the memorial plaque, and the elders certainly mentored me and pulled me in the line and said, no, this is the way we want it. We want it to recognise all peoples. And so we're negotiating with state government and local government, and we've had a couple of wins, you know, as well as you sort of go down those dry gullies as well. And I'm sure listeners out there have been there with negotiations with governments and private bodies and so on, all the stakeholders, as they call them. Brisbane City Council, we met with Councillor Matthew Burke, and it was a very positive conversation we had with him about 2 weeks ago. And one of the things, and I respect my uncles and aunties on the committee, and I know, they're elders, and they were saying we need to be in Anzac Square.
That's where you want to.
That's right. That's where we commemorate, and that is a memorial to Australians who went to war, and we're Australians. We've contributed to the war, to all the wars. Right from the Boer War to today. Even protecting our countries, whether we want to call it invasion or settlement, we've protected our countries, and as well we're warriors protecting our countries. And so this is just another step in this country recognising what we've done. Now, it's a bit like the sacred Turingas, finally have been inscribed on this country, and that's what memorials are about, remembering. And about for us to have our sacred time to sit down and reflect.
Vern, you were saying before that during the song break that your local RSL has got behind you, one of those that have been quite supportive of a dedicated memorial for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander servicemen and women.
The best in Queensland, Sherwood Interpilling Sub-Branch, and at Corinda there, like I tell you now, I was talking about it, and the membership there, and I was talking about it to a couple of niggers down there, and then I decided to to talk to the committee, the subcommittee, or the committee. Talk to a president, a secretary, a treasurer, in regards to could I have a 5-minute talk on it at a AGM, which was in March, and they give me permission to do so. I got up and I spoke my piece for about 5 minutes, and they all give us the support. Well, when I say five, probably 10 minutes, but anyhow, they give us support. They not only give us support verbally, they send a letter to us supporting. They also send a letter to the RSL. RSL, the biggest mobber, brick walls everywhere, anywhere. And that's not only coming from us, it's coming from the diggers too, because that's another reason why a lot of our people, a lot of ex-diggers didn't join RSL, because of their attitudes towards us. But they've done all that, and they just donated a small amount of money to us, but they were the first ones. They were the first ones that showed some interest in. You know, Dale and them from the union that have sent out, and the committee, have sent out numerous letters to different organisations, black organisations, I can tell you too. Most of them haven't responded. So that's what I was talking about, early part about United, saying that we can win this fight. We can't do it without their help. And they need to find some time to at least answer us in a letter form or email form. But the Sherwood Services Club is a group of blokes that just listen to an old black fella, stand up there for 10 minutes, explaining it to them what we want to do. Reassuring that we're not there to segregate against anybody. We're not saying we want a different, we want a separate ceremony for us. So we're not saying we want to go and place our wreaths apart from where we go and do their dawn service. No, this to me, if council approves, they have in principle, but until we see it in right, we won't, and we won't talk about it at the minute. If they approve something in Anzac Square and we can put a dedication piece up there, whether it be a plaque or what statue, that's something we have to decide yet. That to me will be a part of an educational progress. Like Murray School, they could take all the school in there and say, look at this here. This is the dedicated to all your uncles, your aunties, your grandfathers and all that stuff, and read the words of it. And I'm sure they'd feel the pride. Not only our people, but schools from everywhere could come and have a look at that. And it's in the significant place. There was some suggestion we have it in different places around here. One was Musgrave Park, but I'm afraid the biggest voice against that was probably me. Probably me and Ricky, because it was going to be held in a significant place. The most significant place for me and Rick and the rest of the vets is in Anzac Square. That's where we want it. We don't want it anywhere else. If we can get it, we'll take it. We'll know then that it'll be looked after. Council will look after it. And we know that it's a place for everybody. Look how many tourists go through that square a year, millions.
It's part of the national consciousness too,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, that to me is in the sub-brands, sure we're doing that. Thank the boys for it. It just blew me away. And they not only said that, the president told me that once we get the words together and what we want to put on a plaque, he will put it on the wall outside.
So you'll have something.
We'll have something at we'll have something on our wall outside the Sherwood's RSL branch. The president, Kevy, he has a real connection with black fellas from over Vietnam. I'm sure he wouldn't be wild with me telling this story. He was serving with the black hall, Stewie Harold, over Vietnam, and I know him very well from Rocky, the Harold family. Unfortunately, he was killed over there. Kev came up to me, and I've known Kev for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. he came up to me on that night and he said, Vern, he said, you know, did you know Stewie? And I said, yes, I did. He said, well, bro, he said, you know, when they got killed that day, he said, I should have been on that Jeep myself. And he nearly broke down, you know. And so he knows where we're coming from. He can feel the same pain with us. He knows that helps our healing too. Mm. People don't realise that. It helps everybody's healing. You have something like that and you can go and stand in front of it and read it. As I said on Anzac Day, I'll have a tear in my eye. I go in the Anzac Square there sometime Vietnam Vet Day and that, and I'll go and have a look, and a lot of my mates will come with me afterwards. Mm. And I'll probably have a tear in my eye again if we got that up in a couple of years, hopefully. Mm. I think we had a window of 4 years. We've been gone a year, but me, the quicker we can get it up there, the better. If we can get the place in Anzac Square. They're refurbishing this year, aren't they?
No, they're starting. The plans are on the drawing board, the refurbishment, and it'll be consecutive years, you know, from 2016 right through to 2018, and that's commemorations of Anzacs,
yep.
You know, from 1914 to 1918.
Yep.
And we want, the committee has talked about the memorial as a signature piece, that in 100 years' time people will be able to sit there and say, you know, this is based on traditional design as well as contemporary design, artistic expression, and will reflect our values as part of this great country.
Yep.
And I'd like to support what Vern's saying as well, you know, in the sense of this isn't about segregation. Now, if I can just tell a story from Uncle Cess Fisher, you know, years ago when I was working in the Department of Aboriginal Affairs, Uncle Cess Fisher was having a yarn. We were trying to get, you know, the first time on Anzac Day that our servicemen and women marched under the Aboriginal flag, and I was part of the branch that organised that with Isabel Trago. But Uncle Cess Fisher was saying he went to Korea and there was no segregation. You know, there was no segregation as accepted by his comrades, his brothers in uniform. He, at the end of Korean War, they've come back to Sydney and he's gone into a hotel with his mates. And the publican there refused to serve him a beer because he was Aboriginal, he was black. And his mates, you know, soldier buddies, they wrecked the pub. They wrecked it and said, you're not serving a beer here today, are you? And I think they used choice language than that.
I'm sure they did. Vern, I wanted to put this question to you. We have a lot of young people who listen to this show through our training centre, and we're hoping that they might, you know, decide that they want to pursue a media career, but sometimes something else might come across there. And maybe having listened to you, they might decide, you know what, I might like to, you know, might like a career in the armed forces. So what kind of advice would you give to young men and women who are contemplating a career in the armed forces?
I think it's a career that they can't go wrong in. You know, like security, for one thing. Sure, if you're trying to be a soldier, you first have to think about the consequences that you may face. But as the old saying goes, don't let fear stop you. Mm. Go along and do what you want to do. It's like following any path that they want to. If they want to become journalists, they want to become a league star or something, like, just go on and do it. They want to go and do it in the army, I'd say go on and do it. It's something that you have to be disciplined for, though. You have to be able to put up with the training of it. You have to be able to put up with a few other things of it. You need to think about it before you go and join it. Mm. I think you can. People will come out. There's so many. They do so many courses in the army now. And while you're doing the course, it's costing you nothing. You're getting paid. Why sit out here and try to get NAP study or something like that and go to college here when you can join the army, get paid and do the same course in the army?
And go to uni in the army.
Yeah, mm. And go forward.
What was the discipline like for you? Were you...
Very rigorous.
Very good?
Yeah, it was a lot more than there is now, because we've had a couple of reunions up towns when we talked to the diggers there from our old battalion and that, and there was a confidence course, an obstacle course that was set up at Townsville. They closed that down because of health and safety, mind you. Health and safety. They thought it was too dangerous, so they didn't do it. So I can tell you now, right, there's little things like, I remember when last time I went to Conungle before we went over, they woke us up at, you have to go for a five-mile run every morning before you had breakfast. So they'd wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and they wouldn't allow you to go to the toilet, but they would make you have a drink. Then they'd make you run in columns for 5 minutes, or 5 miles.
Mm.
And one of the things, but, you know, I wasn't supposed to do one thing, but, some of us did because it was just too much. So I don't know if they do that now, but that's something that we had to do.
That sounds...
I'd like to say hello to my lieutenant up in Charters Towers. His name was Ian Rafferty, very famous Australian name because of Ian Rafferty was, as you all know, was an actor. So we used to call him Chips. We still do. I still do call him Chips. And he didn't really like us calling him Chips when he was over Vietnam, you know.
Yeah,
especially around the other officers and sergeants. Say, so, how you going, Chips? How you doing? All right, and have a good day on Friday.
Oh, dear. And one final question to you, Dale. I guess we should get the details for you for people who want to write in to support the efforts of the committee to have this dedicated memorial.
Yep. If you write into to support the memorial, you can find me at care of Griffith University at Mount Gravatt Campus, Messing Ridge Road, Faculty of Education or School of Education, and that'll get to me. The university has gift donations as well, and so it's tax-free. People can, I think it's any more than $5,
mm-hmm.
can claim it back on their tax.
Yep.
And so we've worked very closely. It's taken 12 months to get that through Griffith, and they've come on board with us, and they're very supportive of the work we're doing. The committee aren't paid. They're voluntary. As you know, Karen, I'm quitting work, and I'll be spending the next 4 years on this. Griffith University has given me my office and meeting space for the committee work. And so we have the steering committee as such. We also have an artistic committee, and so we're looking at artistic expression. We'll be calling for expressions of interest very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
And we also are now getting on board an education media committee because it's very important that we bring the public along with us, and it's people with experience on that committee will direct us on how to do that. I joke and say the uncles tell me to go pick up wood and I'll go pick up the wood for them to throw it on the fire. I should say the aunties too, because we have a few aunties on the committee, and they're great, and their wisdom is certainly sought after and respected.
All right. Well, if you missed writing down those details for Dale, we do have them here at the station, so you're more than welcome to give us a call and we'll pass on the details.
It won't be long before Griffith will have it up on their website, and we'll certainly make a very easy path for people to donate online, send checks or whatever else. We'll certainly make it clear because, look, as a Murray, I don't want to be going flipping through websites trying to find somewhere to give some money. I just end up saying, I'll bugger it.
All right. Well, I appreciate you both popping in today to have a chat with us. Thank you, Vern, for sharing your story. And Dale, we will no doubt catch up with you again. You'll keep us abreast of posted on what's happening with the memorial.
Certainly will. And I'd like to also thank all the non-Indigenous or non-Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander servicemen and women out there who are supporting us. It's nice to know that we're starting to be accepted and recognised.